Welcome to the Lab Up Leaders series, a showcase of global change agents and experts in healthcare and laboratory management. Here's your host, Lab Up Global Founder, Robert Farias.
We'd like to welcome Laman Gassama to the podcast. Laman, nice to meet you. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Great, thank you.
Robert, I'm fine. And how are you?
Good, thank you. Laman, let's get started by introducing the audience to your academic background, please.
Okay. I am Laman Gassama, a Gambian who is into biomedical engineering, who have started his primary education in a remote village in the Gambia called Tankula. And from there, I proceeded to my junior secondary school in Bikama, where I currently live now. And at the same school, I completed my senior secondary education. That's Kindred of Bottrop Technical Senior School in Bikama. And immediately from senior secondary school, that's the grade 12, I went straight to technical college called Gambia Technical Training Institute, where I pursue a course in electronic servicing by then. At completion, we did City and Jill London Certificate in Electronic Servicing, level 1 and 2. And from that, I was lucky to be in the employment era as a junior electronics assistant in Medical Research Council. That's the MRC unit at London School.
So Laman, let's back up, just stop there for a quick moment. So from your electronic service training, were you directly into the MRC unit, or did you have other stops along the way before you got there?
After the electronic servicing training, or after the course, I went to MRC as a student attaché, as an internship for 6 months. And after 6 months, I was lucky to be employed by the Gambia Radio and Television Services based on my electronics background. So I was there for 1 year, 6 months. Then I later joined MRC as a junior electronic servicing technician. That's back in 2003.
And just give us an understanding, Laman. So at that stage, when you were starting off very early, and it's quite some time ago, what would have your job entailed at that point at MRC?
At that point, when we started back in 2003, we were into just repairing or servicing minor equipments like incubators, centrifuges, vortex mixers, just some basic electronics equipments in those days. We did that for 2 years. That's from 2003 to 2005. So we are just looking at basic electronics devices, medical equipments.
Okay. And how did it evolve from there?
Okay. From there, back in 2005, the unit hired an experienced biomedical engineer from Canada called Kevin Taylor. He together with some of the technicians at that time, we pioneered the biomedical engineering department in 2005. By then, we were just three technicians plus one engineer, and he serves as the head of department.
Okay. So how did that change what you were focused on at that stage? So you started off by repairing, some of the more basic equipment, and then how did things shift when that shift happened?
Okay. Immediately in 2005, when he started, he looked at what we're doing from the basic electronic servicing equipment, that's the medical equipment that we do from vortex mixers, incubators, centrifuges, basically lab equipments. When he started in 2005, a lot of high-tech equipment, that the complex equipment that we now currently looked after, were all on service contract. Even microscopes were on service contract. And the first thing he did was we set up a workshop, set up the department by repatriating almost all the service contract. in a shift basis. Like he started gradually taking the first technology that he took from, he repatriated from service contract was the microscopes. Because somebody was hired from UK to be doing that cleaning microscopes, which he think we can do. And then when that service contract was repatriated, that money was used to train us on how to service microscopes, basically laboratory microscopes.
Great, so then the savings that were held by the service contracts essentially got reinvested back into the staff to increase your capacity to handle them going forward.
Yes, exactly. Excellent. So when those service contracts were repatriated, and now the savings were now used to train us, because I think the ideas that training your staff to service those equipment, he think is there, the capabilities are there. You just have to train the staffs on the ground gradually from one tech to another. So we started with microscopes after saving that money for the unit. And then he now looked at, I think, safety cabinets. That's the air handling technology. That's the microbiological safety cabinets. It's like the same thinking. It was on service contract. Somebody was paid like close to, I think, per year, £12,000 in 2005 to come and do certification on those things. So now he also repatriated that service contract and then saved that money for the unit and then trained the staffs. We went to the UK to do some training on microbiological safety cabinets. And we bought test equipment from there. When we are all certified to certify those equipment, then we bought test equipment on the remaining money. So now that service contract has also been repatriated, and there was a huge cost saving for the unit. Now we have trained staffs who can service, who can repair, who can certify microbiological safety cabinets.
And how did the staff volume actually change as well, Laman? So you're one of the earlier recruits, I imagine. And then, so how did the team size grow as well as you were adding these various pieces of equipment to your maintenance baggage?
Yeah. So he convinced or he justified to management, if you give me more staff, I can train them to be servicing more complex equipment rather than just mine equipment, and then the rest will be on service contracts. So I think to change the minds of the leadership, that this is something that is possible because it's happening or is working in Canada, in America, Europe, and other developed countries. And he thinks he can just also develop the same mindset in here and then make some cost savings for the unit so that some of those high techs can be managed in-house. So when he convinced leadership on that, then we started, he now started to write justification for more staffs. By then we had two staffs on internship from the same college, technical college called Gambia Technical Training Institute. They did the same electronic servicing course and they were with internship with us for 6 months. After 6 months, their competencies were checked and then he think they can do the job, and then management was approached and they approved it. So now those jobs were advertised and they applied. We started with two staffs in 2005, added to the three staffs that we had, now making it five staffs. So in those days, we are five in number, managing over plus 2,000 equipments. That was over 2,000 equipments in-house. Mm-hmm. But gradually taking some high techs from service contract and then use that money to train us. So in the first 2 years, we had a lot of trip back and forth from manufacturer side for service trainings in Europe, Americas, Asia, on a different, lot of different companies, because we deal with a lot of different manufacturers on different technologies. So we were sent to their factories for training. So the first 3 years was basically training the staff so that we can maintain these high techs instead of just maintaining or managing just minor equipments.
So tell me, Laman, what was the transition like? So, you know, service contract ends, let's say on June 1st. I imagine there was some lead time to make sure that your team was trained up enough in advance before that took place. What was that process like?
Yeah, so the process that it takes is that first, if service contracts were repatriated, we know how much savings we make for the unit. So now we have to do a training plan for the staff. So the first 3 years was intensive training for the staffs on high-tech equipment at the manufacturer side. So we are invited for field service engineer training on those high complex equipments like flow cytometry, radiology equipment, ultrasound, hematology, and biochemistry equipments. I think we started with those things first before we move into other high-tech equipment. So training plans were drawn first, and we write to manufacturers that during the process of buying equipments, this is mandatory for years for you to decide or for you to confirm that after buying equipments, my staff will be trained on this equipment at your factory at our cost. We pay for accommodation, but the service trainings were free of charge, FOC, and we only pay for the travel and accommodation.
Interesting, okay. And then from a model, Laman, as things moved on, I imagine the scope of the equipment that you managed and the scope of your staff probably as well has changed over time. Can you describe to us how things have changed over the last few years, for example?
Okay. After immediately when the scope has changed, our scientists and all the users or the customers of those equipments, because they are our customers, we are a service department. Mm-hmm. I think what they've realized that the downtime of their equipments has improved a lot, and then the availability of those equipments have improved. Because imagine if something was on service contract, you need to do a repair. Calling a field service engineer from Europe or America takes a lot of time and money. So now the uptime of those equipments has improved significantly.
At one point, you know, you were managing upwards of 2,000 pieces of equipment. How did that shift over time? What would be sort of your guesstimate of the current state of that?
Currently, because from 2,000 plus 2,000 equipment, now our customers or the users have confidence in the department, because now after doing all that and prove to leadership that this is something that is possible, we prove ourselves, we manage those equipments in-house, and then now the systems is working. Because like we have an inventory of all these equipments in our database called Asset Information Management System. So after getting the inventory, we know exactly what we have. Now the confidence is built in our staffs that we can manage these things in-house. Now, and then this is what management or leadership or the scientists will use to justify some projects. Like, yes, we have an in-house biomedical engineering department. If you give us this project, we can do it in-house. We can do it, and then the downtime of equipment is reduced to a minimum. The performance of those equipments is improved. So that confidence has been built into our customers, and now they go out and sell those ideas to maybe project owners or project sponsors, and then so that we can have more projects in the unit. So the department has grown from strength to strength, from 3 staffs to 5 staffs. Now we are currently 20 staffs. We have the core biomedical, how that comes in, I can just explain a bit.
Please.
Biomedical engineering department currently have 3 sections integrated into it. That's the refrigeration and air conditioning unit, or the HVAC unit, and then the incinerator or the bio-waste management unit has all integrated into the department. Because I think leadership has realized our strengths. They realized that this is something that is possible. So now we're managing the HVAC department. We call it refrigeration and air conditioning unit, and the bio-waste unit is also part of biomedical engineering. And then the core biomedical engineering is also existing, which is 10 staffs, plus the 2 other staffs, making it 20.
Great.
So currently, as we speak, as of last week, we have 20 staffs integrated into our department.
So let me talk about the medical lab scientists and the researchers that are working in the facilities that you're now supporting. You mentioned a little bit about how things have changed for them in terms of, you know, lesser downtime and more reliability, perhaps, or better maintenance, I should call it. Can you describe the general relationship between yourselves and the scientists? So I heard you refer to it before as they're your clients. So can you describe that in a little bit more detail? So this really is seemed to be as a setup as a support service, specifically with a focus on that client and on doing what's right for that client. Is that a right assessment? Can you describe that to us, please?
Yeah, it is the right assessment because we've realized that the users are giving us feedbacks because currently we did a short survey and then the feedback that we get from our customers was satisfactory. Like anytime you send in something to biomedical engineering, because based on our KPIs, some of the repairs, some of the maintenance that we need to do falls within a day or falls within a specific period, like 3 to 4 days or something, depending on the complexity of that technology. Because like the most high-tech equipment, we say when they break down, the KPIs stipulates that it must be up and running within 3 to 4 days. So I think in general terms, we tend to meet that KPI. Those are the key performance indicators. So by that, our customers are satisfied with the service that we provided to them by sending us maybe emails or verbal communications that yes, you people are doing good, we're satisfied with your service. And that trust has been built since that in those days. And now that confidence has been in the users. Now they are opting for more sensitive equipment that they think would have been done by service engineers from outside the country. But now we're doing all that in-house. 3/4 of our equipments are not on service contract. They are managed and supported by the in-house staff that we have.
Right. And from a background perspective, Lamin, so if you talk about the individuals that make up good biomedical engineers, able to handle the type of work that you're looking at, can you give us a sense of somebody who's looking at this from a medical lab science perspective, somebody who began with that degree in mind? They've obviously learned the diagnostic approach and they've learned some of the, obviously the background to some of the test methodologies and so forth involved. What is the transition like for someone like that interested in exploring the biomedical engineering? Like what would be their path to get someone from that background to consider what you're looking at?
Yeah, that was a good question. Like somebody interested in doing biomedical engineering, the first thing that you need to have is this basic electronics engineering. You need to have that background. But like if you looked at the test methodologies that we do, we deal with electronics components. So you need to have that mindset because like, if not, you might be lost along the way. Because like, you need to have that technical background, especially in electrical electronics. Because most of the equipments are built on those techs. Sometimes you either have to work from component repairs or you have to do just board replacements. You have to do all sorts of repairs that we do. So technical background in electronics and electrical is key. Whoever want to join from a lab scientist background, if you want to move into biomedical engineering, you need to have the basic electronics and electrical background. Maybe for example, if you're coming out from like a senior secondary school, at least you must be very good in mathematics and physics, chemistry. But these are basics that you need to learn when you're doing electronics. Basically, physics and mathematics. As we speak, we had, I think as of last week, we have 3 lab scientists. Currently in total, we have 3 lab scientists who have joined the biomedical engineering because what they do is they quit the lab scientist, went to study electronics engineering in their undergrad, and then one of them got his master's in healthcare technology management in the UK. So like he swift from lab scientist and gets his basic, because already he had his physics background, he got his basic electronics at the undergrad, and now at the master's level, he got his healthcare technology management degree.
Great.
So he's a full-time biomedical engineer with the department.
What would be your advice to organizations? So Lama, just some clarity from you, or some topic of MRC units in the Gambia has this reputation, has been there for quite some time. Obviously, the relationship with London School has existed for decades. But it's a particular setup that allowed this investment to be made and allowed this decision to be made to hand over support for a lot of these devices to biomedical engineering. For those in other jurisdictions that don't have this relationship in place, what do you think would be the types of areas that they should consider as a starting point to have some in-house support? So what would you think as a place for someone to start and say, okay, if you're looking for an area to begin, start here and then you can build your way up. Should they follow the model that you followed and start from microscopes? Are there other areas that you would think come in first?
Yeah, the first thing that somebody needs to look at is like, you need to do a feasibility study of the area. Like by looking at the geographical location in the Gambia, West Africa, we are not very far from Europe, but sometimes it's a bit difficult to get something from Europe or something from America to arrive in our destination on time, most of the time, especially if you need some spare parts. So you just first have to do a feasibility study, what's possible. But the model that we have, we started with looking at those areas, what is in-house, and then what can we acquire from outside. So the first thing that we looked at is service contracts were just too much. We can't afford it. And then we wanted to do an in-house biomedical energy department. So the first thing that we looked at is to repatriate those service contracts. And then the savings we got from there were used to train staffs.
And I think that's maybe the key, or a large part of the key to this exercise, beyond the individual efforts of yourself and several others to make this work, would have been the reinvestment of the funds saved in training first before using those funds for other things. So there's a temptation of someone looking at the lab as a revenue model and recognizing that, you know, hey, if I cut the service cost, great, I can pocket the difference, or we can allocate those revenues elsewhere. But in this case, it was very specific: take the service contract savings and reinvest in the people to get them the training necessary.
Yes, that's exactly what we do. And then the other part of the savings were used to buy test equipment, like workshop tools, the test specialized test equipment that we have to use on doing some maintenance on complex equipments. Like without test equipments, we cannot do. And then some part of the money is still used to recalibrate calibrations of those equipments. But sometimes you have to send those things outside to make a calibration on them before you can reuse them again. Mm-hmm. So all the savings that were done, some part were done on training, some was used for buying specialized test equipments, and then the others were used for sending out for calibration.
So Lama, let's just wrap up here for this first part. And I, again, as we've shared in the past, I look forward to having you participate in some webinars we'd like to organize in the future around these topics to get into the more details and to be able to answer some questions from audience members. I'm sure we'll be looking to pick your brain on some topics. But anybody you'd like to acknowledge for the progress you've made, anybody who's been a mentor or supporter to you that has allowed you to get where you'd like to go, anybody you'd like to recognize?
Yeah, first of all, I'll acknowledge it. Acknowledge the support that I got from my first line manager. That's Kevin Taylor. Kevin was so supportive. He's a Canadian biomedical engineer. I think he's currently working in Northwest Territory. That's the Yellowknife territory. Kevin was so supportive, and then he gave us the encouragement to be part of the field, and then that he advised that he support us from day one up to where we are now. So he gave us all the trainings, all the initiatives, all the ideas, and then I'm thankful to him with other line managers we have. And our current line manager, Christopher Vandy, is the current line manager. Because when we started back in 2005 to date, we have almost 5 line managers that came in and now they left. Kevin Taylor, Sona Mulani, Martin Manzi, Ibrahim Almajali, Joel Kumandu. Yes, those are the heads of department that we have. And then currently we have Christopher Avandi as the line manager for the biomedical engineering department for MRC at London School. So I'm saying big thank you to all for your support. Currently, previously, where we started and where we are now, there's a huge difference. We've started with managing simple medical equipments. Now we are supporting and managing high complex medical equipments like flow cytometry, radiology, hematology analyzers, chemistry analyzers, et cetera, et cetera. We are thankful. I am thankful to everybody. And then the colleagues that I worked with from day one up to date, we have a lot of people coming in and out. So I'm grateful to all my colleagues, my big brother, Idi Mani, Ibrahim Anyasi, and Tony Gomez. Those are the people that I started with, and Marcel Jata. So a big thank you to all and all the current biomedical engineers and biomedical engineering technologists that I'm currently working with. I'm saying a big thank you to everybody. It's a pleasure working with all of you. And I'm saying thank you, thank you, thank you for all your support.
Very good. Thank you very much, Laman. Thank you for making time for us today and sharing the stories of the progress that MRC made and the journey that you went on. I look forward to having you as well join us for some of our upcoming webinar series, where we can discuss many topics in the biomedical engineering space that are of interest to our lab friends as well. So thank you again, and look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you, Robert, for giving me the opportunity. And I'm also saying thank you two, for this podcast record. Thank you.
To make a suggestion of someone that would make a great guest or topic you would like to hear more about, please visit us at labop.org. That's labopp.org.